You are listening to the Wells Tech Podcast, where we talk about technology that can serve the church and its work of spreading the gospel. Wells Tech is a part of the Podcast Network on Streams, the internet media site sponsored by the Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod. Join the conversation by visiting our podcast website at wellstech.wells.net. You're listening to the Wells Tech Podcast for Wednesday, March 16th, 2011. This is episode 175, Office 2010. Welcome back, everybody, to the Wells Tech Podcast. This is episode 175, and we are in the midst of Lent, and we're glad that you decided to spend a little bit of time with us to talk technology and ministry. This is a show where we hopefully provide a little bit of entertainment and a little nugget here and there that you will be able to use in your life or ministry. Joining me as usual, and the gasoline that runs this engine and the linchpin of the Wells Tech Podcast, direct from Mississippi, Sally Draper. Good morning, That's Sally. Right.
Good morning, Martin. You didn't know Wells had a technology office in Mississippi, I bet.
That's our Mississippi branch, yes.
There you go.
How are things in Mississippi? You're down there visiting your mom.
Well, I am, and they've got this weird thing down here. It's called sunshine and green grass, and I'm just soaking it in. It's good in Mississippi.
Good. And the humidity, too. Although it's probably not bad. Springtime is really nice down in the South.
It is. There's lots of azaleas blooming, and it's just a great time to be here. Better than in the summer, I think. So right. Feels like summer in Minnesota, actually. So
right.
Enjoying it all. Doing a little bit of techie stuff. You know, when you go a visiting, you have to clean up computers and things like that. So as of right now, my mom's laptop wireless is working great, but she can't print to her wireless printer. So I got to figure out what the deal is there. And the desktop that's wired maybe has a virus on it. It's not connecting to the internet at all. So got my work cut out for me.
Well, it is good that you are there. So
there you go.
It's kind of a vacation. You're kind of on R&R, but you're also doing this show because we can't not have a show. And the show this week is a topic that maybe is a little dry for some, and maybe that's not the greatest buildup, I suppose. That don't turn off the MP3 player yet. We're going to be talking about Microsoft, and specifically their Office suite. We've talked about different tools, and a lot of the picks that we have are related to Microsoft products. We've talked about other productivity suites like OpenOffice and Google Docs, but we've never really devoted a show to talk about just this entire Office suite, which is, you know, so predominant in the industry and in computing as Microsoft Office, and specifically the latest version, which is 2010.
You know, I laugh when you say it's a little bit dry because as you look at Microsoft, it's just got a different feel to it. We did a lot of research, a lot of exploring of their website and the resources that they offer, and Microsoft just feels and looks a little bit different. It's set its own standard, and they definitely are very professional in everything that they put out, and they have a ton of resources out there, lots of support, lots of video tutorials and templates and clip art. It just goes on and on and on. And they have, like you said, you know, very high standards and very good.
It's a mature product.
That's a good way to say it. Very mature product.
So. I don't know if what you started out with as your word processor, Sally. I was a WordPerfect guy back in, you know, the 5.0 days and the character based, and you had the little, could see the code down at the, you had a code window down at the bottom, and I really liked WordPerfect, and then it kind of fell off the face of the earth, and I was essentially forced to go to Microsoft Word, kicking and screaming it was, because I really didn't like it. But over time, it's kind of grown on me, and I've appreciated the improvements that they made, especially with this latest version.
Sure. That maturity that they have really comes into play, as you see. You know, you experience, boy, I wish I could do this, and then there's a way to do it, because they've definitely fully flushed out all those possibilities. And if you do switch to another word processor or use online Google Docs or something like that, you see what you're missing pretty quickly.
Yep, you do give up a lot. And the one thing that we wanted to bring out in this show is the productivity gains that you would probably experience or will probably experience if you use all of the Office products, because they've now made that whole ribbon methodology consistent across all the applications, including Outlook. And we've standardized on Office here in the Senate Administration Building. And it's not to say that we didn't consider others, but one of the things that we really like about Office is just the amount of resources that are available online. And in preparation for this podcast, there was no shortage of those.
Sure. And we'll definitely be building a lot of that into the show notes for this episode. So you can find things like comparison charts of which Office product is best for you, because they have a different levels of their Office products and different things that you get with those. You can find training materials. You can find templates. We even have a page on our WellsTech Wiki where we've set up some templates and things for Office-based newsletters and things like that. So just no shortage of things. I did some searching in their templates area for church-based templates and came up with newsletters and posters and a lot of different things that you can download from their site and just plug in your own information and be ready to go with a really professional look kind of right off the bat. You know, it's really simple to do. So really no shortage of great resources for using Office.
Yeah, and when you pick an Office suite, you really only want to do it once. And that's important for both a church and a school office to figure out, you know, what are we going to standardize on, both for support, but also, again, these additional materials. And I think, by and large, there isn't another product out there that comes with as many of these, you know, as large an ecosystem of peripheral kinds of templates and training materials and those kinds of things that make it much bigger than the product itself, and they've integrated that right into the system at this point, where you really don't even need to leave Word or Publisher or whatever to find templates at Office Online or whatever. And it's become, I think it's become a very good tool, especially for the stuff that the traditional, you know, church office or school would need it for, whether that's basic word processing, simple accounting, you know, with a spreadsheet, presentations through PowerPoint, or, which, you know, the thing that I spend the most time in, and I don't know about you, Sal, is Outlook. I still believe Outlook is the best, on at least on the Windows side, the best productivity tool that I have, where it brings together my calendar, my email, my task list, and just everything I need to kind of keep on top of my day and communicate with those people who want to communicate with me. It's just I think, a well-designed product. And you can put together, cobble together, you know, I've tried this in the past, other tools to accomplish some of the same things, but this brings it all together in one simple package.
And, you know, we've talked a lot about the Microsoft Office suite, but Microsoft also has another side to them now, in that they are in the cloud.
Right.
And this was something they were lagging on a little bit when Google Docs really took off with their cloud-based resources. But I guess it was last summer or so that they introduced Office Web Apps, and it allows you to have your documents and things in the cloud, be able to access them from anywhere on the internet, and it ties to your Windows Live account, and you have, what, 25 gig of storage that can be dedicated to it. So plenty of room to work in the cloud with Microsoft Office as well.
And it's a nice implementation too. I compare it. There's been a lot of chatter, you know, on the internet comparing it to Google Docs, for instance. And for those people that use Office, I think the cloud solution, Office Web Apps, is probably a better choice because it acts very similarly to the desktop app. Now, there aren't all the features, but primarily you can get general word processing done very easily. And now with the update to 2010 and using the Office Web App server, the 25 gigs that you talked about, and you need a live account, which is free, you can actually do some of the exact same things that some of the people who were favoring or leaning toward Google Docs were saying, well, you can't do that in the Office Web Apps, and that is real-time collaboration. So if you've got Office 2010 and you're syncing to the cloud, you can work on the same document at the same time. So real-time collaboration in that way. So I think they've done a nice job, and I think they're going to continue to move that way too. So that's a nice addition, and I think it puts it on some equal footing with some of the other products.
And Martin, maybe you want to spend a minute and explain a little bit about this new Google app called Google Cloud Connect for Microsoft Office.
It's a little plug-in. We talked about it a few weeks ago, which allows you to, rather than using the Office web apps, you can use Google Docs to synchronize your Word documents, for instance, or your Excel or PowerPoint documents. So Google Docs kind of replaces the live.com web apps application per se, and then you click a little sync button and up it goes, and you can send out notifications to anybody who has access to that particular Google Doc. In this case, it would be a Microsoft Word document or Excel document, and they can also do editing in real time. So, and those are free too. So there's no charge for that. You do need Office, of course, on your desktop side on your computer.
Kind of boggles my mind. I'm getting on overload here because I can't imagine how you would use Microsoft products with Google Docs, and it's like a merry-go-round, but you can do it all.
Now, Sal, you live in both worlds, here in the Senate office, and you, by extension, as a Senate employee, have Office installed, on your computer. But at your church school office, you don't use Office, do you?
We don't. We've made the switch to OpenOffice, which is free open source software, mm-hmm. and so we use the OpenOffice suite. They have a word processor, spreadsheet, presentation tool, right. and database, and we make use of all of those different components. Yep. Not quite as smooth of an experience, but it certainly does the job for us, and it does it at no cost, and that's our primary motivation for moving away from the Microsoft Office suite.
Right. And you give up some things, to mm-hmm. do that. And we've talked a little bit about that. The same debate's going on for cloud computing. Should we go all the way to Google Docs and use all of their stuff? And of course, that's free as well. I think the price tag is not as big an issue if you kind of break it down by the available nonprofit or charity pricing that's available. I think right now you can get a Office Professional version, which includes Outlook, Word, PowerPoint, Excel, Publisher, and OneNote, mm-hmm. all for $90.
Oh, wow. And
if you think of how often you update Office, maybe it's every 4 years. If you break that $90 down, that's a little bit over $20 a year that you're spending for Office. And you have to kind of weigh whether that's worth it or not. We in the Senate office feel that it is worth it because of all the other things that Office brings and its integration with our SharePoint server, which is also a Windows product. So.
Got the trade-off there. I guess probably worth mentioning that we can point people to our shopwells.net website, and Mark Robinson is our contact there. If they are interested in purchasing Office and getting that great pricing, Mark can work out all of that for you. So you can email Mark at shopwells@wells.net if you'd like additional information. And there's lots of other great discounts that are available at shopwells.net as well. So check that website out.
Yep. Should we move on to our interview this week?
Sounds great.
We had the pleasure of talking with a staff minister from St. Paul's on Alaska, Wisconsin, Dan Scheffel. And he's in this open source space as well, kind of a big proponent of the things that you can do there. And he's in charge of technology there, and he's got some interesting solutions for some challenges he was having with timekeeping. And so he's going to share a little bit about something called PHP Time Clock, and then tell us a little bit about the other things that they've got going on there for productivity, how he manages their infrastructure, and very similar to a lot of congregation situations and some of the technology challenges that they have. So let's listen to our interview with Dan Scheffel. Joining us today is Dan Scheffel, staff minister from St. Paul's in Onalaska, Wisconsin. Good morning, Dan. How are you?
Good morning. I'm doing just fine.
Thank you for taking the time to be with us. Really appreciate that. Maybe to get us started here, you could introduce yourself a little bit, what your call is, what that entails, a little bit about your family, hobbies, you know, the personal stuff, to get our listeners a little bit more familiar with who Dan Scheffel is.
Sure, that would be great. My call here, currently here at St. Paul's, is staff minister, which was an evolved position. My background and experiences, I was 15 years a Wells pastor. In November of 2007, our congregation created the position of parish administrator, and I was hired to that position and served in that position for 3 years. Last summer, our board of elders decided our pastors needed more help, and long story short, they brought to the voters a motion to create a staff minister position, and then they called me into that position. Currently, I'm doing quite a bit of what I used to do, administrative and other things, as well as picking up some ministerial duties, hospital calls, shut-in calls, and a few other things to help our pastors. I've been married for 34 years to the same wonderful woman, my wife, Elaine. We have 5 children and 6 going on 7 grandchildren. We live in La Crosse, go to church at St. Paul's, and of course I serve here at St. Paul's. Hobbies are basically anything with hands-on. One of my nicknames is Mr. Fix, and I also have a great technology. Just last night, a group of us here that are tech-minded talked about some issues we've been having with email, specifically sending mass emails from our church to our members.
Did you say you had a degree in technology, or you have responsibilities there?
Responsibilities in interest. I'm a geek at heart. I don't know as much as a lot of other people, but I'm always willing to learn. So.
Okay.
Well, very good. And so I assume that means that when you have geeks at heart on the church staff, they get found out, and you're probably responsible for some of the technology, if not all of it. You're St. Paul's church and school setting. So can you tell us a little bit about your infrastructure there and how you manage all that hardware that you have going on there at St. Paul's?
Well, during the day, I am the go-to person, but then I have go-to people that I go to. St. Paul's has been very blessed. I mentioned to you recently, Sally, that we had a member that is a Linux administrator working for Gunderson Hospital, and he pretty much manages and sets up all of our network stuff here at St. Paul's. We have a couple other people that work at CenturyTel in web design administration. One of the people that was at the meeting last night is what I would call a Drupal guru, and basically is our webmaster. We have a couple other people that know quite a bit about tech and help us out here too, so we've been very blessed. Infrastructure, we have a network setting with a server and switches. Our server is older. This Linux guru I mentioned is going to be getting us into a newer server. Just recently he set up a couple of new hard drives on an existing box, I'll call it, desktop unit to serve as NAS storage for us, because our servers are very limited in storage at this point in time. So all of our staff taps into our network for various uses and to the internet through our network setup and system. We also have in our facility a cart projector and system, as well as a projection system in our sanctuary that we use for a variety of things, PowerPoint presentations, wells connection viewing, and so on.
So with go ahead, Sally.
I was just going to say, sounds like a lot of technology going on there, and a blessing to have tech-minded people that are willing to volunteer in your congregation.
It is a blessing. You know, if I can't handle it, I usually go to Bob Richmond, the gentleman I mentioned. We've had a couple problems with teachers being able to access our network, and I can play with the cords and connections and try to troubleshoot, but if I can't make it work, then he comes in and performs his magic. We do have 26 computer stations and a computer lab in a separate room for the school to use. We have five computer stations in each of the upper grades, I believe 4th through 8th grade. All the staff has computers. One of our blessings is that when Gunderson gets new equipment, they donate their old equipment to public schools and nonprofits. So pretty much all of our computers, monitors, keyboards, mice have been donated by Gunderson. So that is a huge blessing for us.
Now, Dan, we understand that with that talent and the Linux experience there, you are making use of a tool called PHP Time Clock to manage staff hours. That's interesting to us because I know that might be a need in other congregations, certainly larger ones. Tell us a little bit about that application and how it's been working for you.
Well, like many that are out there, and again, our Linux man is a huge fan of open source, as most of us are. This Time Clock is an open source product, so it's free. It's simple, but has most of the features you really would want in a time clock program. We have it set up on one. We have a couple of auxiliary servers, you might call them. We have it set up on one of those, and then we have shortcuts set up on the desktops where needed. So that staff can access this program to clock in and clock out. For example, our secretary, our custodian, our teacher's aide, all of our surround care workers who are paid employees and hourly employees use this time clock program to punch in and punch out. And then every 2 weeks, I do a report on everybody. Actually, I check it daily to make sure there are any discrepancies and fix anything. People can leave notes, oh, I should have punched in at such and such a time. Correct those. Every 2 weeks, I do a report and email that to the member that does our bookkeeping so she can put together payroll checks. And we've been doing that for, I think, close to 3 years now, and it has worked very well. When substitute teachers come in, they also clock in and clock out, and that's a part of the report, too, and then that gives information as whether or not they sub the whole day, half a day, or whatever.
Sounds like it might be a good tool for some of those with after-school care programs to look into, because I know a lot of the challenges there are keeping up with the time that the kids are in the program. So thanks for pointing us in that direction, not just for those with staff needs like yours, but also maybe for other needs as well. So mm-hmm. I'm also wondering, Dan, being a geek at heart, I bet you have some other favorites that make your life easier there at St. Paul's. Maybe you could share with our listeners any of your favorite software or hardware productivity picks that have been a blessing to you in the ministry you're carrying out.
Sure. I mean, I'm glad you mentioned that, Sally. I had mentioned to you in a previous email that I wanted to point out also as a part of this discussion that I try to view technology as a means to the end being proclaiming and teaching the gospel of Jesus so that souls can be saved and nurtured, and we try to keep that in mind with all of this technology. As far as making life easier, there are a number of little programs, most if not all of them free, that we use here and I found very helpful. One of them that I actually showed to one of these tech members last night that wasn't familiar with it is a little free program called KeePass Password Safe, and I've been using that for, I think, over a year now, both at home and here at church. You can enter all of your passwords for this website, that website, you know, your technology, like the cPanel for our website. You can enter that all in there, and it's all protected by a single password you use to access the program. And one of the neat features of it, I showed this gentleman last night, because he was accessing his passwords through a spreadsheet, and then he had an Alt-Tab back and forth to, you know, to enter it in and so on. With this, you can enter the address that you're going to, double-click on it in KeePass, and it'll open the site in your browser, the login page. Then you go back, you double-click the user ID, it copies it to the clipboard for 10 seconds only. You go back and paste it in, same thing with the password, enter, and you're into the website. And it's handy for keeping your password safe and for accessing the places you need to go very quickly. You can use it for password-protected documents, for financial information, for websites, for email. I have all of the logins for our time clock for each of the people in there with their user ID and password and so on. A couple of other programs that we use quite frequently here are Smart Defrag, which again is another free program, and CCleaner. And I pretty much, every time we set up a new computer, and we're going to be setting up 60 new ones here shortly, I generally load those on and get them operating. The CCleaner will clean up any of your temporary files so that the disk isn't cluttered and full. And it also cleans up any registry issues or mistakes. It allows you also to back up the registry before you fix in case there's a problem. Smart Defrag is, I feel, better than the Defrag program that comes with computers in that, and again, it's free. You can set it up to run automatically in the background, and every so often throughout the day it will automatically do a small defrag of your hard disk to try to keep things compacted. You can also set it up to defrag on schedule every other day, once a week, or whatever, and those have come in quite handy as well. Two others, Qt PDF is a little free program you can download, and I know in the Office 2007 and 2010 products, you can just save documents as PDFs. But if you're in any other program, for example, Shepherd Staff or a web page or anything else, and you want to turn it into a PDF to send to someone, it's pretty difficult to do. Whereas this Qt PDF installs sort of as a printer, and it comes up in your print dialog as one of the printers to choose, and then it creates a PDF document of whatever you're looking at or what you want to turn into. ThinkToy, probably a lot of people are familiar with. It's a freebie from Microsoft. Mm. I use that to sync files to my thumb drive, to sync things at home, and so on. So those are a few of the ones that I use quite often.
I'm having a little bit of trouble with audio, but hopefully we got a good recording of all that. I think all of those are excellent picks, Dan, and I appreciate you sharing that with us. To wrap things up, perhaps you can tell us a little bit about any future plans, technology initiatives there at St. Paul's. What does the future look like for St. Paul's in terms of technology?
Well, we're always expanding and looking for new things to do. We, as I said, we're going to try to get a newer, better server in place, which will serve our needs better. We have upgraded some of our switches from 10 to 100 Mbps, things like that, better backup technology. We're still using tape, and some of our tapes are getting old, and they fill up quicker. And so we're looking into some of those types of technologies. One other thing that we started about a year ago in our Narthex is we have a TV on a cart that our secretary creates a PowerPoint each week with about 6 to 8 slides, capitalizing on some of our announcements in the bulletin, and kind of dresses it up a little bit, and then that scrolls on that TV during services on Sundays and Thursday nights, and it's just another way to get information out to people.
Great idea.
Yeah, before we leave, Dan, we probably would be remiss if we didn't mention the upcoming staff ministry conference. I know you're going to be there. Sally and I will both be there as well. That's in New Ulm, Minnesota. It's entitled Beautiful Feet. And the reason I wanted to bring it up is that we'll be talking about technology topics. I think the focus is technology and the arts and all kinds of things related to that, including effective email campaigns, using social media, using Google Apps, All those kinds of things we'll be talking about for that day and a half long conference. That is going to, well, it actually is a 3-day conference, but the opening worship is on Thursday, April 28th. And then we have a full day schedule for April 29th and then a half day for April 30th, talking about all kinds of different things related to the work of the church and spreading the gospel, certainly as it relates especially to what you do as a staff minister. So I believe the website is www.staffministry.net. So if you are a staff minister, and I'm assuming that maybe even non-staff ministers can go. In fact, they let me and Sally in there, so I think that would probably be open. But it looks like a really good lineup, and I'm looking forward to seeing you there, Dan.
Sure, sounds good. Just if I may mention quickly, and if anybody wants information down the road, they could contact us here at St. Paul's. We have smart projectors, not smart boards, but smart projectors mounted in 5 of our upper grade classrooms from 4th through 8th, and they've been being used more and more by the teachers.
Uh-huh.
We also, a couple of years ago, went to a single point access to our facility through a door fob system, and that utilizes software to program fobs and so on, and that has been a blessing for security. So.
Okay. Very good. Very much appreciate your time, Dan. Blessings on your ministry, and we will see you in New Ulm.
Sounds good. Looking forward to it.
Okay.
Blessings on your ministry as well.
Thank you. Thanks so much, Dan, for taking the time. A very interesting conversation, Sally, because I think, as I said before the interview started, he's probably facing a lot of the similar challenges that most churches and schools do.
Yeah, and boy, got lots of great solutions there.
Yes.
It was hard for us to get it all into that one interview. We might have to have Dan back again. I know one thing you mentioned toward the end was a door fob system that
right.
they put in place for security access. And I think that's something that's real positive for schools going through the accreditation process. So that might be something we need to get more details from Dan about.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Thanks again, Dan, and blessings on your work there in Onalaska, Wisconsin. Ministry resources. Sally, we've got anything there?
We do. Just recently, Wisconsin Lutheran Seminary announced a brand new online course that we wanted to make mention of. They're hosting an online course, and the price tag is great. It's a free online course, and the point of the course is to introduce you to their online learning environment. So you'll have a chance to log into the course and interact with it in a way that you would if you were taking an online course from Wisconsin Lutheran Seminary. So just really geared toward introducing people to the environment, getting them comfortable with what they would experience in an online course. And like I said, the price tag is free.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea, I think, would be to bring 5 to 8 people through at a time where they maybe do it within their circuit or something like that.
Sure.
And it's open to all called workers. So if you're interested, you want to check out the link in our show notes, email Dr. Sue Holtz, who's heading up this effort at the seminary, and get registered for an online class from WLS.
Yeah, our listeners may remember a conversation we had not too long ago with Professor Rich Gergel, who talked about this entire program. So this sounds like a natural step to get people comfortable with the environment and going on this concept of professional, you know, distance education and professional development.
Uh-huh.
Makes sense for a synod like ours, where we're spread out and it's difficult for folks to get away, even over the summer, because you're making a commitment of time and distance and money. So this is... I really pray that this is a blessing to our synod, this whole initiative.
Very good. And now we should move on to news and tech. And this week's news has been dominated, on the tech side at least, by the iPad 2.
Yep.
Did you stand in line, Martin? Do you have an iPad 2?
I do not.
No.
I have an iPad, and I think that's serving me well. It would have been even questionable if I would have gotten one, because they sold out within 3 hours, at least around here. Just amazing. The numbers I don't think are in yet, but by all accounts, it sounds like the iPad 2 is going to outsell the iPad 1 in pretty short order. So just amazing. Some of the new features for the iPad 2 are front and rear facing cameras. They've done a little bit of a speed improvement, and they've made it even a little bit thinner and lighter. So this sounds like it is going in the right direction, and it's the same price as the iPad, the initial iPad was. So I think tablet computing is here to stay, and that's bearing itself out, too, in the educational space. We've talked a little bit about this, where some schools are looking at the iPad and tablets like it to be an important part of the educational environment in some of our schools.
Yep, and if you're interested in finding out what people think of it now that they've had it in their hands for a few days, we have a link in our show notes to a whole slew of reviews and other information from CNET. And one of the things I found most interesting on that page is that they have a camera gallery, a whole bunch of photos that people have taken with their iPad 2, because they're getting a little flack that the camera's not very high quality and you can't get very good pictures with it. But you can check out some sample pictures from people's iPads in their camera gallery, and I think they're decent enough. You know, somewhere I read, you know, as good as you can expect if you're taking a picture with a cutting board or something like that. It's kind of large and bulky for taking pictures, but I think the quality is decent if you have nothing else along to take a picture with. So,
right. I just can't imagine holding up, you know, this 10-inch
cutting board.
Yeah, exactly, and taking a picture with it. But
sure.
I bet we see it. So,
yeah.
Let's move on to our picks of the week, Sally. What is your pick this week from direct from Natchez, Mississippi?
From Mississippi, I'm going to point people to diagram.ly. So Diagramly.
Diagramly, okay.
And this is just a quick and easy site for drawing all types of diagrams. It's got a click and drag interface and a whole slew of different clip-arty type things that you can drag onto your diagram. So your traditional flowchart shapes, you can draw diagrams with, you know, squares and rectangles and circles and things like that. But also clip art, computer parts. So if you wanted to diagram your network, there's also finance type things, all kinds of icons. And basically you have this grid area to draw into, and you can do all kinds of fonts and putting things in front of and behind things, a full fleshed ribbon of commands at the top of the page that you can add to your diagram. And then you can save your diagram and export it as an image or a PDF. And so I thought it would be a really handy tool to just bookmark. And when you have that kind of need for a quick diagram, here it is waiting for you in the Web 2.0 cloud. So check out Diagramly.
Nice. Kind of a Visio in the cloud.
Mm-hmm.
Very good. I'm sticking with the Microsoft theme today, Sally. I mentioned Outlook as being one of my primary productivity tools. And one, I don't know if it's a negative, but one thing you really need to take into account when you're using Outlook is how they store all your data. So if you're not using an Exchange server, which most congregations and schools do not, you're probably pulling your mail via POP or IMAP from FinalWeb or from Google or wherever, if you're using Outlook, that is. And it saves all that email in what's called a PST file. And that PST file includes all your email, all your calendar items, all your tasks. And then you have archives that are also in PST files, so that you're keeping your database or your file a little bit trimmer, and it opens up a little bit faster. So you may have a bunch of archive.pst files. And these things are huge, and there's always been a problem with these files for backing up, because when Outlook is open, it's actively writing to one of these the current PST file, so you can't back it up, and that's a problem. But never fear, there is a tool, and that's my pick, called Safe PST Backup. And if you go to, interestingly enough, safepstbackup.com,
catchy,
there's a free tool There's an enterprise version too, but the free tool works just fine. It really only does one thing. It scans your drive for PST files, so you tell it where it is, and then you tell it where you want to back up the file to. It can be a flash drive, an external hard drive. It can even be a network location. What I do is have it backed up to my Pogo plug, which I've talked about in the past. So that's an external, in the cloud, essentially hard drive. And it just works in the background. You set it, you forget it, and it doesn't matter if Outlook is open or not. It's smart enough to be able to back that PST file up, so in case you ever have a computer crash, you're not going to lose it. This kind of came to mind because my wife's computer at school was having issues yesterday, and she was fearful last night that the tech staff there wasn't going to be able to retrieve her data. And she would have lost, if they weren't able to revive the hard drive, which I think they did, if they weren't able to revive the hard drive, her PST files would be gone. And that means all of her email, calendar items, tasks, everything in Outlook would be history. So this is kind of an important file. So this is a great utility to use. And I would suggest any church or school office using Outlook and that has PST files, grab this product and back it up to the network or to some external area off of the hard drive. Great little tool.
You sent shivers down my spine, Martin. Those are sad, sad days when all your data disappears.
That is almost the worst feeling in the world.
Yeah. So, great pick. Thanks for that.
All right. We've got some training coming up we want to let the folks know about.
Yes, you and I are both going to be offering Final Web for Teachers as well as Final Web for Dummies coming up this summer. You'll be leading courses in Milwaukee on August 1st through 4th,
yep.
And I'll be doing the same here in New Ulm at Martin Luther College on June 27th through 30th. So the teachers is a one-day kind of quick look at all the different functions a teacher would need to maintain a classroom website. And then the dummies is a deeper dive. It's for the system administrator types, and we actually have it divided up in three separate days. You can come to one, two, or three of those days and get all kinds of information from the beginning to the end of all the functionality of Final Web websites. So sign up today. The links are bit.ly/FW for teachers and bit.ly/FW for dummies, and we'll include those links in the show notes.
Yep, and it'll be all updated material because Final Web has redesigned their administrative interface tools, and we're going to try and update our material so that you will have the latest and greatest, so that what you see on the screen is what you'll see in your documentation. And I heard rave reviews on the documentation that that Sally did, and well worth just the price of admission there. Did you mention the price?
Oh, I didn't. The price is $49 a day, or you can do all 3 days of the dummies class for $129, and that includes breakfast, lunch, and snacks, so we treat you well.
Yes, we do. So sign up early. If any indication of the last year is any indication of how it'll go this year, it was very popular. So we had to turn people away last year. Let's move on to community feedback.
Yes. First up, we heard from Judy Trunkle, who's at St. John's in Nellsville, Wisconsin. And Judy asked a question about a website she had been referred to called TechSoup. org. And I'm not sure if we've ever talked about this on the podcast before, Martin, but I know I've looked at the site and signed up for an account. You have to actually, you know, provide your 501c status information to them before you get an account there, but it is geared toward nonprofits and giving them discounts on all types of technology. Probably the biggest draw, if you go to the web page and look at their homepage, is they advertise Microsoft suite of products for $23 to $31. And they also advertise things like QuickBooks and Norton and Adobe products as well. True to their word, they do have those products available. Unfortunately, there are sometimes limitations on either education or religious organizations mm-hmm. getting access to the products. So they're not always for everyone, even though it's kind of bundled under this nonprofit
right.
Title. So when I did set up an account and everything, I found out I can't get the Microsoft suite for $23 to $31 because they already have separate pricing for us to be able to make use of it, at, like you said, at the $90 price
right.
that we mentioned earlier in the show. And in similar fashion, I can't get the QuickBooks pricing, the Norton pricing, or the Adobe pricing that they...
So you're saying your mileage may vary.
Exactly. And so, you know, if you're looking for some of their other suites of products, they do offer a long list, but none of them that I found that would be useful for our church or school. So, you know, check it out, and perhaps there is something there for you, and you can get extra great pricing through TechSoup.org.
Very good.
So next up, we heard from Adam Valesky. He left a comment on our show notes website about a couple of topics that we've talked about recently. First up, he pointed us to Vanco as their online giving provider. And I think we mentioned Vanco with one other person
yep.
that had written to us. And we'll include a link in the show notes. Adam is from Christ Lutheran in Juneau, Alaska, and so we'll have a link in the show notes to their website. You can see how they manage their online giving page using Vanco. And then he also mentioned that he's doing a couple of neat things with their Facebook page. They're on facebook.com/ChristJuneau, and one is that they use the public listings, like a business listing for their church, and this allows them to do location-based check-ins and tag people and things like that with the public listing. So I'll have to dig in a little bit and see if I can figure out how to set up that public listing on my Facebook page. Sounds interesting.
Yep.
And then the other thing that they do is that he's discovered is that there's a deals option where you can associate a deal with your public site. So in the corporate world, you would say, you know, get a free cup of coffee if you check in on our Facebook page or something like that. And he's got some interesting ideas. He thought about creating a 100% free salvation in Jesus deal if people check in at their church. So I think he's still working on that. I'm not sure if Adam's mastered all of the deals yet, but sounds like a fun concept to look into. So thanks for your comments, Adam.
Absolutely.
Next up, we heard from our tweeting teacher, our friend Jason Schmidt, who's at Gethsemane in Omaha, Nebraska, and he shared a link to a project that he kicked off this week. It's a wiki page that he's doing with his third and fourth graders where they're going to be using Google Maps to track Paul's missionary journeys.
Cool.
And so if you want to check out their wiki page, I know Maren McPeak commented that she checked it out and was excited about their project, and so... kudos to you, Jason, for kicking that off, and we'll be tracking it and seeing how you progress with that effort.
Yeah, that's great feedback, because we had a whole show talking about Google Maps, and this is a great example, or a Google Earth, and this is a great example of using that in the context of ministry.
Sure. And then finally, Martin, we had a few links to share from Digo. Maybe you want to talk about that first one there.
I just ran across the fact that CCLI, which is the competing copyright licensor product to OneLicense.net, recently announced that they now have a similar feature that OneLicense.net has, which allows for podcasting or streaming of your church content. And so take a look at the link there in the show notes, but it sounds like if you are a CCLI customer, now you too can have protection, or you can be legal if you want to do some streaming or podcasting. So
very good. Good find. And the last Digo link that was shared was one from me, and it's to a website called Viravis, VIRAVIS.com. And I was just excited to see this because it is a cloud-based database platform where you can develop your own database on the web.
Mm-hmm.
And I know this is something we've talked about before, how these kind of platforms haven't really started to emerge yet. This has kind of taken it to a new level where you can have a relational database. And I just was really excited to see, to find one and read some good PR about it. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's taking your data and storing it out on the cloud, and I'm not quite sure about how you get it off of there if you wanted to, or you know, how you interface with it. It's not something I have great experience with yet, right. But I was just more excited just to see that this kind of thing is being developed and that we have this as an option now to work with data. So
yeah, I
just
think
wanted
we'll
to bring that to your attention.
More and more of that just makes sense, because the internet and our connections to it are speedier and speedier, and data is pretty text or
speed
intensive.
Easy to store.
Right, yeah, and it's important to have quick access to it. So with that in place, it's good to have that available in the cloud, so to speak.
Yes, very exciting.
Next week, we are looking forward to having professor or teacher Al Nolte on the show, who's going to talk about an exciting new program at Fox Valley Lutheran called the STEM Academy. And on top of that, we'll be taking a quick survey of memorization tools. We're in the midst of confirmation season as well as Lent, and we thought it might be good to revisit some of the tools we've talked about in the past and some new tools that have appeared on the scene, especially in the mobile space, that will that'll help you and or your confirmation students memorize all those Bible passages. So that is next week. Let's close the show with the music of In His Service. I heard the voice of Jesus say from the album In His Time. Thanks, everybody, for joining us. We'll talk to you next week.